your work life, your relationships, your money, your health, the meaning of life. Welcome to How to Do Life with Marty Nemko.
I'm guessing you wouldn't consider me the number one candidate to be somebody who was really into gardening. I was born in the Bronx, grew up in Flushing, Queens, an urban New York Jewish kid, and yet I really love gardening. I've been gardening my whole life. I think part of it I inherited from my dad, who despite our little postage stamp backyard, he would, even in his 80s, he would turn the soil over and grow tomatoes and give them as presents to the neighbors and drive them around to people who didn't live nearby. And that's me too. And I thought I would share with you, there's so many reasons why I love it. And while it is, you know, it is America's most popular hobby, but if you haven't really gotten into gardening and are looking for something to do, and especially if you're not very social, I'm not a very social guy. I can be social when I need to, but I'm happiest when I'm alone. If you would like kind of a solitary hobby, with all kinds of benefits that I'm going to lay out, I like to think that you'll enjoy this this segment of How to Do Life. Okay. First of all, it's, you know, I live when in my work life, I live in the world of kind of the abstract, where I'm counseling, giving, you know, helping clients come up with career goals and strategies and practices. And gardening is so concrete. You know, you plant, you have your hands in the soil. It feels concrete. You see things grow. You get fruit and flowers, and it feels, you know, pulling weeds feels rewarding. Pruning, you see something, there's an overgrown thing, and now it's nicely shaped. So it's concrete. It feels nice in the same way, and this is going to make me really lose my credibility. I like to clean this kitchen because you see the, you know, from that full sink of dishes, in 5 minutes, it's clean. On the floor that has all kinds of dirt on it and whatever, in 5 minutes with a broom and a dustpan and then a mop, and it's clean. And it's even more so when you're gardening, which is more pleasant than cleaning toilets. It's also good exercise, you know, of all kinds of exercise. You know, I like carrying heavy sacks of soil. I like digging deep holes. But even if you can't do that, you're bending all the time, and you can lift as little or as much as you want. I mean, if you're not in the mood for carrying 40-pound sacks, you can, you know, shovel out little bits of it into, you know, small amounts that you can carry. And get, you know, there are plenty of older folks who I know still love gardening, but they can't dig deep holes anymore, and they're not going to cart 40 or 50-pound sacks. So they hire people to do that, which they can't do, and they do the rest themselves. The pruning, perhaps the planting, the harvesting, and especially enjoying the growth, seeing growth. Speaking of growth, that's one other of the major advantages of gardening. It is a miracle. It's one of the few miracles. That word miracle and amazing and awesome, those are words that are tossed around all the time. But it really is awesome to see something that was a seed or a little seedling, and almost every day it's growing and growing and growing. Tomatoes to me are the most unbelievable, and roses, because you start a tomato with a seed or a seedling like this, and then within 2 to 3 months it's 6-7 feet tall and has all these delicious tomatoes on it that are better than anything you can get in the store. And you go to the farmer's market, they're not as good, and they're $2 or $3 per tomato, whereas your typical tomato plant, you can get 20-30 tomatoes on a plant for the cost of a 99-cent plant, or in the case of seeds, 25 seeds for $3 or $4. All right, what else? I'm no religious person, I'm an atheist, but there is a spiritual component to that. It's not just intellectually or seeing, wow, how things are growing, but there is something truly amazing about the dividing of cells. We'd see it in its most profound manifestation in a baby born as a result of this wonderful thing called sex. And then little by little, those two little cells, the gametes, divide and divide. How does dividing lead to something being bigger? It's incomprehensible. It's spiritual, even if you're an atheist. It's beautiful. And without having the pain of pregnancy, you get to see that growth when you do plant corn or tomato or zinnia or marigold. Very quickly. Amazing. So, anyway. And then, of course, there is the fruit, whether it's literally fruit or the fruit of your labors as in the flowers. I am fortunate to live in California where I can harvest oranges from my backyard that taste great, and lemons, and flowers of all sorts, tropical flowers, and certainly roses grow easily here. They're not subject to disease. But wherever you live, you harvest. You know, I grew up in New York, and my dad, as I said, would grow tomatoes, and being able to enjoy them, what you have yourself grown, and then the pleasure of giving to neighbors, it's great. It really is. And just flowers, which are, you know, in some sense not as critical to life as fruit or vegetables, but to, you know, houses are a manufactured environment. Most of it is it's sterile. It's not alive. And if you even bring cut flowers, which is among nature's most beautiful creations, there's nothing as beautiful as in my mind, other than the female body, which I consider for some reason the most beautiful thing, but also in the flora world, a classic hybrid tea rose with a spiral form. You're not going to find anything much more beautiful than Google Black Magic Rose and you'll see what I mean. It's one of the most beautiful, or Gemini. So, you know, it brings life to homes' constructedness, artificiality. Then there is, you know, still in the spiritual dimension, annuals like violas in the winter and spring, or zinnias or marigolds in the spring and summer and fall. They're pretty evanescent. You know, it's like you see all of life compressed into two or three seasons. It's exciting to see it go to full flowering in the summer and then slowly fade and leave. And then, you know, some plants come back again and again for a long time. But the plant, rose plants, I don't know if you know this, they can live 30, 40, 50 years. And tree peonies, which don't do well in California unless you get a lot of frost, tree peonies can live hundreds of years. Japanese maples can live 100 years or more. I grew a variety of Japanese maple called Tabukayama. Tabukayama was discovered or found, it wasn't bred, in the 18th century. And there's something about, and it's beautiful, it's this fairly small Japanese, red leaf Japanese maple with what they call dissectum leaves, very, very fine leaves. In a kind of cascading, like waterfall look. And I get to grow that. It's in the front of my house. Red leaves and they get really red and then orange in the fall and then they fall off. And then they regenerate again in the spring. You know, kind of like the Easter thing, the regeneration thing. Now let's turn to what specifically you might want to grow and how to grow. And I want to talk about a few things that I know particularly well and are particularly rewarding. We're in winter right now, so I want to talk about violas. Violas are annuals, means you're going to plant them now in February, January. You could actually start as late as, you know, anytime because they're frost hardy anywhere in the country. And there's a couple of great varieties I want to tell you about. One is called Denim. And the other is called Morpho. These are not the big pansies. The big pansies tend to flop over and look crappy. But these violas are remarkably resistant to weather. And they bloom in the winter when nothing else is blooming for a long time. Not just a week or two like primroses will only bloom for a week or two. Or in the fall, chrysanthemums will only bloom for a couple of weeks. But violas will bloom for 3 months, maybe four. You know, I planted mine in California. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area in Oakland, California. I planted them in November, and now we're in mid-February, and they are in full bloom, and I know they're going to keep blooming for another couple months when nothing else is blooming. It's pretty darn awesome, right? So consider planting, and you can, they're dirt cheap, you know, at your big box stores or whatever, or even at a nursery, you know, that's more expensive. It's going to be under $5 for a six pack of seedlings. And you can, you know, pop them into anything from a sunny window box to a border near your front door to pots near your front door. As long as they get sun, they like sun, full sun. Now let's turn to, actually something else that I love in the winter. And again, this is, forgive me for rubbing it in your face. But in California, and in not all, but much of California, you can grow citrus. And in my area, I have it's a pretty much frost-free zone. I can grow oranges, and there's probably no plant in my mind. If I had one plant to take with me on a desert island or whatever, it would probably be an orange tree, because even out of bloom, it is a beautifully shaped tree in deep, dark green foliage. It's very attractive. And then, of course, when the fruit come, and they come in amazing quantities, you have these gorgeous orange trees, you know, on the with the backdrop of the green, deep green foliage, and the orange is delicious. You know, it's really remarkable. And orange trees last, you know, I've had my orange trees for 20 years. And you can get them in dwarf size, so they can stay as short as 8 feet or 6 feet tall, or as high as 20 feet tall, which is the full height. Same with peaches. You need to usually get a good, you know, some winter chilling, meaning, you know, I won't go into details, but 300-400 hours of winter chilling in order, at least in order to grow most peaches. It'll vary with the varieties. But I have a variety of nectarine that only does require, I think, about 200 or 300 hours, total hours of what's called winter chilling, which is temperatures below 45 degrees. And the most delicious nectarines, and in the spring, covered with these pink flowers. You've seen like cherry blossoms. Well, peach blossoms like that on a double delight are just as, you know, spectacular. And to be able to harvest peaches. I remember as a little boy, I would walk down the street and there was peach trees in New York. And I would be able to pick right on the street. And I would just be able to pick a peach tree, peach from a tree. Somehow that seems miraculous to me. Anyway, now, so a little bit about planting, whether it be roses. The advice is pretty similar for whether it's roses or citrus trees or orange tree or, you know, peach trees or whatever. I'm being a little oversimplistic, but it gets the point across. It's pretty close to accurate. It's good enough. You know, it's one of those, gardening is one of those things, you don't have to be perfect. Dig out, if you can, if you can't do it, hire somebody to dig out a roughly, let's say, an 18-inch cube of soil. And then fill it back with maybe 20% some kind of compost, whatever, organic compost or composted leaves or some compost you buy. But the rest soil. And then just, you know, the best time is now to buy bare root plant. It means the roots, where it's not, you know, they're not fully grown yet, but you see there are these roots that are, they're called bare root. You know, whether it be citrus or it be roses, they're cheapest now and easiest to plant during this dormant season, kind of in February, March. And then you don't need to fertilize usually for a while. Let it settle in for about a month. Then just keep it well watered if there isn't enough rain, and get them full sun. Put them in a full sun location. That's all I really want to say about planting. And then fertilizing, you know, every 2 months during the growing season. Just any old fertilizer. You don't need any specialty fertilizer. Just your general purpose fertilizer. You know, which is cheap. You can get. I want to talk about a couple of varieties that I love. I did talk about rose, Black Magic. The Black Magic rose is the most beautiful. Now, I will admit that in humid parts of the country, it will get black spot, which is a problem for sure. But there are other roses that are more black spot resistant that you might want to try. Actually, I'm going to tell you that unless you're living in a low humidity climate, forget about roses. They tend to get too much disease. and you have to spray them with pesticides and fungicides. Here in the Bay Area and in other low humidity climates, we don't have to spray for anything unless you're really fastidious, and I don't do that at all. Some roses that are particularly good if you did want to grow them, just for briefly. Pope John II is a beautiful white. King Midas Touch is a good yellow. A red is Black Magic, or I'll stay with that. Bonica is Black Spot Resistant, Bonica, and lower growing. And I'll stop there about roses. In terms of citrus, you know, you can't go wrong with your basic Washington orange. It's fabulous. Meyer lemons are incredibly prolific. Tend to be more compact. If you want a big lemon tree, try a Lisbon. That's all I want to say about that. And now we get to, I think I want to tell you, you are listening to How to Do Life. I am Marty Nemko.
You're listening to How to Do Life with Marty Nemko. You can email Dr. Marty Nemko with your comments and questions at mnemko@comcast.net. Or for his articles and books, visit martynemko.com. That's martynemko.com. Now back to How to Do Life.
And thank you for staying with me. We're talking gardening. The first half of the show was focusing mainly on why it's, even though it's America's most popular hobby, I think it's still underrated relative to the benefits that one can derive. And now I'm talking more about how-tos. So now we get to the spring, and the most rewarding things you can grow are, there are two annuals. Annuals means if you plant an annual in the spring, it will bloom in the spring, summer, and fall, and then die. But the good news is that it essentially compresses life into three seasons. And it's exciting to see, you buy, again, a six-pack of zinnias. And by the way, my favorite series in zinnias are Magellan Coral and Dreamland Red, which can be gotten by seeds, from seed catalogs like Park Seed, or in six packs in your local nursery. And zinnias come in two types. They're the kinds I like, those Dreamlands or the Magellans. They're only 12 inches tall, but there are much taller ones if you want to do that. And then, in the really tall one, there's a really beautiful one called Purple Prince. That's if you really want a tall one, that's really a great variety. But in any case, you can plant them as soon as the last frost is over. They're so easy. You buy them in a six pack. And so that each plant is this tiny little, like 1.5 inch cell. You can just pop one or two into an 8-inch pot or into a window box, or again, along the path to your house or any sunny location. And they will, in no time, within a month, go from this little nothing to a full-grown flower machine that will bloom through the summer and through part of the fall until we get to frost. And I'm not picking at random those, because zinnias and marigolds are among the longest blooming, and they're most widely available. Let's see, in terms of varieties, one of the most reliable varieties is Bonanza, yellow, gold, or orange. And they're small flowers, but it's constantly blooming, and they're very compact, just maybe 8 or 10 inches tall. There are other varieties. They're called African marigolds, which have bigger flowers. There's an Antigua series, there's an Inca II series, there is a Moonstruck series, that will give you good sized flowers that are bigger flowers, pom-pom sized flowers, maybe 4 inch wide rather than the 1 inch bonanzas. Just give them full sun, just pop them in, give them a little fertilizer, keep them well watered. And you've got three seasons of amazingness for next to no money. Now I want to talk about corn and tomatoes, the two most rewarding plants you can grow. Tomatoes by far really are, because they go from, again, you can buy a six pack of award-winning varieties like Big Beef or Sweet 100s for just a few bucks. Or as I do, I tend to enjoy buying them from seed and growing them from seed, which are not because it's so cheap, but it is. It's like $3 for 25 seeds. But I can get some really special varieties, my favorite of which is Orange Perouche. They're little cherry tomatoes. They're full-size cherry tomatoes, like an inch and a half wide, that are orange. And they're the best. They win all the taste test awards. So Orange Perouche, if there was one tomato variety I would choose, it would be that. But there are other good ones, as I said, like Big Beef is a very good one. What else is another one that is great? Parks Whopper Improved. And Burpee just come out with a new variety that's supposed to be their best yet, called Bodacious. So you want to try a few of those varieties. And the nice thing about them, those three will ripen at different times. So if you plant them all at the same time, you're going to get the Orange Perouche fruit in 2 months. The Park Whopper Improved or the Big Beef, you'll get it in 2.5 months, and the Bodacious in 3 months. So you've got to, and they will continue to bear fruit for even longer than that, but you'll end up with a longer season if you plant those three varieties. Let's talk about planting tomatoes. Let's assume, I think it's beyond the scope of this to talk about. I'll tell you briefly. If you're going to buy them from seed, it's real easy. Just plant them in any potting mix. Put them in, if in little pots, like plant two seeds per little pot, and just cover it lightly with soil and keep them well watered. Keep them out of the sun until they sprout. When they sprout, a couple of sets of true leaves. There are these first initial leaves called dicotyledons, which are not real leaves. But when you see leaves that are not ovals, but that are serrated, that are lanceolate, that are lance-like, you get two seeds, two of those. Then you can move your little seedlings into the garden, again, in a sunny spot. Tomatoes are not picky at all about the kind of soil. Just mix in a little bit of compost or whatever. Maybe throw in some general fertilizer in there. And then the only trick to planting tomatoes well is you want to plant it so that everything but the leaves, the top two leaves, are buried under the soil, because that the stem will sprout new roots and that will give it a stronger plant. And you're definitely going to want to have tomato towers, which, don't get the short ones. Get the ones that are like 5 feet tall. You can get them on Amazon or at your local nursery. You don't have to get expensive ones. You can get the cheap ones. They're fine. And you may need to use a little snail stuff around the seedlings, because snails love brand new little tomato plants. But after that, just keep it well watered, and then keep it well watered and some fertilizer until after the fruit are starting to just start to turn red, or in the case of Orange Perouche, turn orange, just starting, and then cut back the water, maybe by a half or two thirds, so they're not mealy and watery. And that's the key to good tomatoes. Corn. There's many wonderful varieties, and one is also coincidentally called Bodacious, but one that I really like particularly is Honey Select. Honey Select it's very sweet, and disease resistant, and very productive and beautiful. And it's another one of those plants that you can see the miracle of growth from and this you plant directly in the soil. As soon as the soil has warmed a little from the frost, you can plant these directly in the ground. The only downside of corn is they take space. You want to plant each seed, maybe you want to plant, maybe 6 or 8 inches, maybe 8 inches or 12 inches apart, but you need to have four rows of maybe 4 feet each. So you need a fair amount of space to grow corn. But You know, there's nothing that tastes as good as fresh-made corn. And again, if you plant just that amount, you're going to have more than enough for one family. And so you're going to be able to give them to people who come to visit you. You're going to be able to give them to your neighbors. It feels really good. You know what I do with my, I have way too many. I have five orange trees. I have way too many oranges. So all I do is every time I just go out with a basket, I fill the basket and I just put it out in my front of my house, and I have this little sign that I put up and say free oranges from my backyard. And miraculously, I come out there every day and all the oranges are gone. And it feels great. I love seeing people take the oranges. And it doesn't cost me anything. Well, a little water and a little fertilizer. So again, you may not be able to grow oranges, but in almost every part of the country, you can grow peaches and nectarines. And again, you're going to be able to, in one tree, you're going to get more peaches and nectarines than you could possibly use yourself. And they're just great gifts. You know, there's something when you go to somebody's house and you give a gift, and it's something you bought. There's something sterile about that. But when you bring over something you grew in your backyard, or maybe you took some of those tomatoes and, you know, you decided you were going to make sauce out of them, or you were going to stew them, or pickle the tomatoes, pickle green tomatoes. You know, so that way you've got gifts you can give all year. And by having these carefully selected cut flowers, like certain rose varieties, like Black Magic, like Queen Elizabeth, like Gemini, those, you know, like Prominent, these are all roses that have good, that are really good flowers for cutting. You can be giving gifts all the time. And it is corny to say that it feels better to give than to receive. It's true. Anyway, let me summarize. I think gardening offers incredible spiritual and practical joy of seeing the miracle of growth. It's great exercise. The fruits of your labor can enliven your house, are amazing gifts. And and especially if I've been very careful to mention varieties that are particularly rewarding. As I said, violas now for this time of the year, marigolds and zinnias as annual. These are annuals. These are things that they're gonna life compressed into three se two or three seasons. The individual rose flowers, it may only last a few days, but the transient is even contributes to making it feel so wonderful. As well, that rose bush could last 20, 30 years, and a tree peony can last hundreds of years. So I like to think that gardening deserves its space as America's number one hobby. And I wanted to make the case for you in the abstract as well as in the specific. And now I'd like to end today's show, as I end all of them, by reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
For comments on the show or to consult with Marty Nemko, his email address is mnemko@comcast.net. How to Do Life is produced by Marty Nemko. Post-production, Mel Baker. Music from the Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks for listening.